so I just looked down at my hands in my lap.
Look, I don't want to fight or anything. I just care about you. I really do.
He kisses my lips, and then quietly, with his mouth next to my ear, he whispers,
That's all I'm trying to say.
I should say it back. I care about you, too. I care, damn it. I fucking care. I want to scream it. I care. Say it. He lifts his head, a small glint of hope in his eyes. Look, you don't understand. It's not like this is easy for me. I can't. My voice squeaks, mouse-like, as I try to make my brain and mouth work in concert. I feel the tears in my throat, filling my eyes. He looks confused, worried, and I think almost relieved. Relieved that I'm really not so tough, not so hard.
Okay,
he breathes, dumbfounded by this sudden, unprecedented display of emotion.
Baby, don't,
he says softly.
Look, I know. It's okay, come here.
He pulls me into him, and I let my body fall against his side. And I don't even care who sees us right now. I just hold on to him as hard as I can. Everything that's been coming between us seems to dissolve, and for once, I don't feel like a complete liar. For once, I feel calm. Safe. Terrifyingly safe.
Hey, let me take you out for your birthday. Out to dinner or something.
Okay. I hear myself answer right away.
Seriously?
He asks, pulling away from me, holding my shoulders at arm's length.
I'm gonna need that in writing.
He reaches for his backpack like he's getting a pen and paper. Stop, I say with a laugh, smacking him in the arm. I said yes.
Okay, it's a date.
His hands find their way around my body with a practiced fluency.
You know, all this talking.
He mumbles as he kisses my neck.
You want to come over?
Tomorrow, okay? After dinner, right? I smile. He moans like it's agony, but then smiles and whispers,
Okay.
When I arrive at my locker the next morning, I'm greeted by Mara's handiwork. She has gone all out decorating my locker. It was tradition. She taped up balloons and crepe paper and bows and curly string and a sign that reads, Happy 15th Birthday. I cringe. I tear the sign down as fast as I can, but I have a feeling it's too late, that he's already seen it. I discreetly slip the piece of paper into the garbage on my way to homeroom. I hear footsteps jogging up behind me, and I take a deep breath because I know they belong to him, and I know he knows somehow. He pulls me by the elbow into the boys' bathroom with this wild look in his eyes.
Get out!
He yells at the kid who is peeing into one of the urinals at the wall. To the right of the boy's head, I notice these black letters glaring at me. The fluorescent lights bouncing off the grimy powder blue tiles. Eden McSlutty is something illegible. It had been scribbled out by a marker that was not quite opaque enough. As soon as the kid had scrambled out of there, forgetting to even zip up his pants, Josh is in my face.
How could you do this? After everything, how can you still be lying to me? You said you were 16. I'm 18. You knew that. I trusted you.
I didn't. I was going to remind him that, technically, I never told him that, but I can see that he's not about to hear it. He just paces back and forth, ranting, fuming.
I mean 14. 14. 14,
he shouts, the volume elevating with each repetition. Calm down. It's not that big of a deal. I had never expected him to be this mad about it. Age isn't something we had even really discussed. Besides, there are plenty of senior guys who date freshmen. That would be the same age difference, if not more. Nobody cares about these things.
It's a big fucking deal. All those nights, in my bed. You were 14, right?
His words are so sharp they sting.
Right?
He repeats. Yeah, so?
Do you realize that I could be accused of raping you? Statutory rape, Eden. Ever hear of it?
I laugh. Wrong thing to do.
This isn't funny. This is not funny. This is serious. This is my life here. I'm an adult, okay? Legally an adult. How can you be laughing?
He shouts, horrified at me. How can I be laughing? I can laugh because I know what the real crime is. I know that the kind of wrong he's talking about is nothing, that people get away with truly wrong things every day. I know that he doesn't have anything to worry about. That's how I can be laughing. Look, I'm sorry, I tell him, trying to stop my mouth from smiling, but you're being ridiculous. You didn't... I lower my voice. Inhale, exhale, inhale again. You didn't... rape me. There, I said it. The word I've been spending so much time and energy not saying, not even thinking. Of course he couldn't appreciate what it took for me to utter that grotesque four-letter word out loud. He just continues, his tirade only gaining momentum.
Yeah, of course I know that, but it doesn't matter. Your parents could still press charges against me, Eden.
They won't, though. They don't even know about... you, I was going to say, but he interrupts me again.
You don't get it,
he continues.
I'm talking about actual criminal charges. I could get arrested, go to jail even. I'd lose my basketball scholarship and everything. Everything could get completely fucked up.
He stops. I watch him take a few shallow breaths, watching me, waiting.
Well,
he finally says, sweeping his arm in my direction. What do you mean, well, I ask, my voice as harsh as his.
I mean, don't you care?
He yells, then quieter.
Don't you care about anything? About me?
His stare pierces me, searching to see if I remember any of what happened yesterday in the stairwell. Of course I remember, but since I'm really good at pretending, I just look right back at him, right through him. My face is a stone. My body is a stone. My heart is a stone. No. That one syllable, the biggest lie, the worst lie.
What?
He breathes. No, I tell him calmly. I don't. My words like knives destroying everything we had created. I don't care, I repeat with icy precision. You would think I just punched him in the face the way he looks at me, but that only lasts for about 1, 2, 3.5 seconds, and then he quickly resumes his anger.
That's fine. Great, actually. That's great. Because we can never see each other again. I hope you know that, Eden. We can't...
Please. I laugh bitterly. Listen, you know, I had fun, but this was pretty much over anyway, don't you think? Some other person has taken over my brain, and I'm screaming at her to shut up. Stop talking now. But if it's ending anyway, and it is, I can't let him think he is in charge. I'm in charge, damn it. His face sort of caves in a little around the edges. He looks so defeated, I almost start apologizing. Almost start begging him not to leave me. Begging because I'm so fucking alone, and I do care about things. About him, especially. But then he straightens himself up and chokes out,
Yeah, definitely over.
I leave him in the bathroom. I push through the door effortlessly, walking tall and calm, and he stands there, shaking his head at me. Kaylin and Kevin come home on Christmas Eve. They barrel through the front door, struggling with duffel bags and sacks of dirty laundry and backpacks full of schoolwork and textbooks. Mom and Dad falling all over them. Edie, can you help the boys with their bags? They both ask me more than once, but I just stand there in the living room, cross my arms, and watch. It takes a few minutes before the commotion settles, before either of them sees me there. Kaylin walks across the room toward me, his arms outstretched. But something stops him in his tracks, and for a split second, his smile gives way to a look of confusion as his eyes take me in.
Edie.
He says it slowly, almost like a question, not really addressing me, but as if he's trying to make sure it really is me.
Yes,
I respond, but he just stares.
No, it's just...
He forces himself to smile.
You look...
He turns his head to look at our parents, searching, then back to me.
You just look so... so...
beautiful. Mom chimes in, smiling, even though I'm pretty sure she's still as freaked out as I am about that slap, which neither of us has mentioned again. He folds his arms around me stiffly, like he doesn't want to get too close to my breasts.
You just look so grown up. I mean, how long have I been gone, right?
He says with a laugh, pulling away uncomfortably. He looks at me like he wants to say more, but he just walks off, carrying his bags into his bedroom. And now Kevin stands before me, 5 feet away maybe, staring me down, giving me the secret look he must have been perfecting over the past year. The look that is clearly supposed to deflate me, make me shrivel and wilt and retreat. And even though my legs feel flimsy and boneless, like they might give out at any moment, and my heart is racing and my skin feels like it is on fire, I don't flinch. I don't run. Don't back away this time. I want to believe that somewhere beneath that knife-like stare he can see just how much I've changed, how different I am from that girl he once knew. I don't move a muscle, not until he walks away first.
Okay, Edie.
My mom claps her hands together twice. We have to get to work here. Grandma and Grandpa will be here in the morning, so there won't be any time tomorrow. We have to get everything that can possibly be done ahead of time, done ahead of time. I follow her into the kitchen, dreading the next 8 hours of my life. She's in her manic, deceptively chipper, but just on the verge of a nervous breakdown mode. There's something about Grandma and Grandpa coming over that always sets her on edge. I watch as she slips into the laundry room and neatly unfolds the stepladder into an A at the front of the junk closet. I know what's next. She pulls her ancient radio/cassette/CD player out by its handle and sets it on the kitchen counter. Oh, Mom, do we have to? I moan. I can't take it, cooking all day while listening to Christmas music.
Yes, we do. It'll put us in the spirit.
I get started chopping up insane amounts of celery, onions, and garlic. Next, the butternut squash. Just as I'm in the middle of struggling to cut it into the little cubes like Mom wants, the rhythm of her chopping is interrupted.
Oh my God!
She shouts. I nearly cut the tip of my middle finger off.
What?
God damn it! She gasps, Silent Night playing softly in the background.
I knew I forgot something. The goddamn cream of tartar. I always forget it. The last thing I want to do right now is fight my way through the grocery store the day before Christmas.
Do we really need it?
Yes.
She braces herself against the counter and breathes deeply, closing her eyes.
Yes, we do. Okay, new plan. I'm going to run to the store, you keep chopping, and when you're done with the squash, put it in the big bowl in the cabinet above the fridge. Then, will you do these dishes so they're not piling up while we're trying to work?
She's already got her jacket on, over her apron, and is slinging her purse over her shoulder.
Kaylin?
She yells.
Kaylin! Yeah?
I hear him answer, his voice muffled from the other side of the house.
Can you come in here, please?
She calls back, using all her restraint to not flip out and start screaming.
I am not going to yell across this house. She says under her breath as she wraps her scarf around her neck in a tight noose.
He appears in the kitchen.
What are you two doing right now?
She asks as she pulls on her gloves.
Nothing. We were just playing a game. It's paused. What do you need?
Where's your father?
Snoring. On the couch.
He answers.
Fine. Look, I need you to go into the garage and find a box. It's labeled Christmas Decor. It has the nice tablecloth and placemats and centerpiece that we used last year. I'm going to the store. Can anybody think of anything else that we need?
Kaylin and I both shake our heads. And she's gone.
Wow.
He says.
She's freaking out early this year. Is it some kind of a record or what?
He laughs. I know, right? I try to act like things are the way they used to be, but I think we both know they're just not. Can you please shut that off? I ask him, pointing to the radio. He reaches over and flips the dial to off.
So, what have you been up to?
He asks, leaning against the refrigerator.
Other than growing up too fast. I haven't heard from you much at all this year.
He smiles at me, crossing his arms while he waits for me to respond. But I know him, and I know it's a fake smile, an uncomfortable smile. Well, I haven't heard from you much either. It comes out sounding nastier than I meant.
Yeah, I guess so.
He frowns. I start filling the sink, squeezing in the dish soap like it's an exact science that requires my undivided concentration.
Sorry,
he continues after I don't say anything. He has to raise his voice over the sound of the water running.
I've been unbelievably swamped. This semester's kicking my ass.
I just nod. I don't know what I'm supposed to say. It's okay? It's not. And it's not okay that he brought Kevin here. Again.
Okay, well, I guess I'd better go look for that stuff then.
Yeah. After I hear the door to the garage close, I shut the faucet off and dip my hands in the hot water. It feels peaceful somehow. Quiet. The music off, the TV on low in the next room, the muffled clanging of the dishes underwater. Then, faintly, I hear footsteps creep up behind me. It's Kevin. It's like my body knows before my brain does. My senses heightened, my skin suddenly hot and itchy, like I'm allergic to him. The proximity of his body to mine causing an actual physical repulsion, like a warning sign, flashing neon lights, danger, danger, danger. Get away from him, my body tells me, but it's hard to get away from someone like him. Before I can even turn my head to look, I feel his thick hands wind around my waist, feel his body pressing up against my back. And then his voice, his breath in my ear, whispers,
"Looking good, Edie."
Then he moves his hands down over the front of my jeans, then up over the front of my shirt, then all over all of me, his mouth open against my neck. "Stop," I breathe. "Stop it." I pull my hot, soapy hands out of the water, but I can't stop him. He has me pinned against the sink, and his hands can do whatever they want. I consider pulling the paring knife I used to chop the garlic out of the water and plunging it into his heart. But he finally lets go, backing away while he looks me up and down. Smiling, he says,
"Is this for my benefit?"
I should have killed him. I should have done a million things to him, but instead, my shaking voice just asks, "Is what?" But he doesn't answer, just keeps smirking and looking up and down, my heart pounding so hard I can hear it in my ears. Clearly, I had gotten too bold, forgotten the extent of him. He was letting me know. Then he walks away silently, just as he came in, leaving me properly terrified. At 1:17 in the morning, officially Christmas Day, I wake up to the sound of metal rattling. My heart racing because he's there to do it again, I'm convinced. It's him, clanging at the doorknob.
"Edie?"
he whispers. "Who's there?" I choke out.
"Kay. Come on, Edie, let me in,"
he whisper shouts. I walk up to the door and press my ear against the wood. "Are you alone?" I finally ask.
"Am I alone?"
"Yeah." I unlock and open the door just enough to see that it is really my brother and that he really is alone. "What?"
"I have to talk to you,"
he whispers.
"You gonna let me in?"
I move aside, closing the door behind him.
"What, are you sleeping on the floor?"
he asks, stepping over my sleeping bag. "It's my back," I lie. As he sits down on the edge of the bed, it howls. I feel my insides tighten.
"Edie, sit,"
he tells me, patting the empty space next to him. I pull up my desk chair instead. "What?" I sigh, crossing my arms while I stare at him.
"Edie, me and Kevin went out with some of the guys tonight."
He pauses like I'm supposed to say something.
"Some of the guys we used to play ball with."
Pauses again, waiting for some reaction on my part.
"Some of them are seniors now?"
I can see where the conversation is heading, but I'm going to make him say it. Say every word. "Yeah? And?"
"Okay, and some of them were saying things. About you, I mean. Lies, of course, but I just wanted to make sure nobody's been, I don't know, like, harassing you or something,"
he says uncertainly. "Why? What did they say?" He opens his mouth, but starts laughing.
"I can't believe I'm even telling you this. I mean, it's crazy. It's so stupid. They were saying that there are all these rumors about you being some kind of..."
He stops himself and then mumbles,
"slut or whatever. But look, don't worry. I stuck up for you. You know, I told them you aren't like that."
He shakes his head back and forth, still smiling at the absurdity of it.
"Christ, I mean, you don't even know Joshua Miller, do you?"
"Yeah, I know him," I answer.
"What?"
he says, his voice unsteady. I know him pretty well, actually. I grin. The color drains from his face, and then returns abruptly. He laughs again.
Oh, God, you're kidding. You're kidding. Jesus, you scared the shit out of me for a second there.
He continues laughing nervously as he studies my face. I don't laugh, don't crack a smile. Blank.
Wait, you are fucking with me, right?
I just stare at him. No emotion, no regret. His smile fades then.
Please tell me you're joking, Eads. Please.
He begs, hoping this is another one of those times when he just doesn't get it. I shake my head, shrug. No big deal. And silence. A lot of silence. I don't mind. In fact, I'm really beginning to like the silence. It's become my ally. Things happen in silence. If you don't let it get to you, it can make you stronger. It can be your shield. Impenetrable.
I can't... Edie, what are you even... thinking?
He accuses, tapping his index finger against his temple.
I'm gone for a year, and all of a sudden you're... I can't believe... You're just a kid, for Christ's sake.
A kid? I snort. Hardly.
No, Eden, you can't do this.
Oh, really? Who are you to tell me what I can't do? I challenge.
I'm your brother, okay? That's who. I mean, do you have any idea what they're saying about you?
He whispers, pointing his thumb at my bedroom door as if all the guys who were calling me a whore were packed into our living room like sardines, just on the other side of my bedroom wall. I don't care. I lie.
No.
He declares, as if his no changes things.
This isn't you, Edie.
He says, waving his hand over me.
No. No.
He repeats, as if his no is the definitive end to all things about me that don't fit with his idea of who I'm supposed to be. Maybe it is, I tell him. He looks like he doesn't understand. Me, I clarify. How would you know? You've been gone. Sidestepping that question, he just goes on to make more demands.
Look, you're absolutely not seeing him again, Miller. He's too old for you. I mean it, Edie. You're 14. He's 18. That's 4 years apart. Think about it. That would almost be like you and Kev.
Just stop, all right? I can't possibly let him finish that sentence. First of all, I'm 15 now. And second, I'm not seeing him again anyway, but that's only because I don't want to. Lie. But I'll see whoever I want, and I'll do whatever I want with them, and I don't need to ask your damn permission.
You know they're just using you, right?
He blurts out.
I mean, you can't be that blind to think that they actually...
No one is using me. You have no idea what you're talking about. No one's using me, Kay. No one.
Edie, come on. Of course they are. I'm only telling you this because I care, okay? They prey on girls like you. Edie, you have to...
Girls like me? Please, tell me, genius. What am I like?
Naive and innocent. Stupid. That's what they look for, okay? They'll just chew you up and spit you out. You have no idea. They just throw you away when they're done with you. I should know, Edie. I've seen them do it a million times. Those guys, they don't care. Do you really think they give a shit about you? 'Cause they don't.
It wasn't like that. Josh wasn't like... But I stop myself. What makes you think I even want them to give a shit about me? What makes you think I'm not using them, huh? Not that there had been anyone other than Josh yet, but that's completely beside my point right now. He screws up his face like I'm trying to explain nuclear physics to him or something.
Using them for what?
I turn his patented, you're the stupidest person on the face of the earth tone back on him. Isn't it kind of obvious, Kaylin? That shuts him up. He shakes his head slightly as if he could erase the images from his mind, like an etch-a-sketch.
Look,
he finally says.
I don't know what the hell is going on with you, but I do know that you're going to get yourself into trouble if you keep this up.
Get out of my room now, please, I tell him, totally calm.
Promise me, Edie, you're at least being safe. You have made them use...
Kaylin, please. I'm not a complete moron.
I'm just worried about you, Edie,
he says in this oh-so-very concerned tone. His sincerity ignites a tiny fire in my ribcage. Oh, now you're worried? It spreads to my vital organs, engulfing my heart and lungs in thick, black smoke. Wow. Well, isn't this just a great time to start worrying about me? I hear myself growl. Thanks a lot, but that really doesn't do me any good now.
What the hell is that supposed to mean?
But I've said too much. Just worry about yourself. It takes everything I have in me to not add asshole to the end of every sentence I say to him. Mind your own business, asshole. I can take care of myself, okay? Asshole. Leave. Go. Now. He throws his hands up and stands to leave. He turns around at my door looking so far away and says firmly, definitively,
"You know, I don't even recognize you anymore."
And then he's gone. I shut the door behind him, lock, unlock, lock, and pull.
"Hey,"
a guy's voice whispers in my ear.
"I hear you're real dirty."
I swing around to face him. I remember he was with Josh that day in the hall, jock guy, in this exact spot, in fact, when Josh gave me the note at my locker. But it wasn't just a him, it was a them. Two guys. The other one I recognize too, a senior, not a jock, but still in with Josh's clique. He is more like page 16 Abercrombie catalog model. His are weight room fitness equipment muscles, not sports muscles. It's the first day back from winter break. There isn't another person in the hall. It's late after school. I stayed to help Miss Sullivan catalog a shipment of new books. "What did you just say?" I manage, thinking for sure I must have heard him wrong.
"I said you really like fucking, don't you?"
Jock guy answers, trying to touch my cheek. I back away, slam my locker shut, loop my arms through the straps of my backpack, and start walking. Danger. Danger, danger, my skin getting hot and itchy again. The other one, pretty boy, says,
"Don't run away. We just have a question for you."
"Yeah, what?" I ask sharply, trying to seem brave, calm, and tough while moving myself down the hall, away from them, toward the front doors of the school as fast as I can. Pretty boy answers,
"Yeah, we wanted to know if you want to be in our movie."
Then jock guy chimes in,
"It's just a little film we're doing, and we hear you have a lot of experience in that, genre. We figure you could have the leading role."
The human brain is a truly amazing organ, because despite all the nauseous thoughts electrifying my neurons at that moment, somewhere in the dark folds and recesses, I was genuinely impressed that he used the word genre correctly.
"You'll be happy to know you have excellent references,"
Pretty Boy adds, quickly, before spitting his laughter all over me. I walk faster as the fear sinks in, as fast as I can without running, my feet getting heavier with every step. They follow behind, cackling and wheezing.
"Wait, is this you doing hard to get? Because word is that you're actually pretty easy."
Jock guy laughs, catching right up with me. Pretty Boy gets on the other side.
"Come on,"
jock guy continues.
"Don't you want to be a star? Get paid for what you do? You'd make a killing."
"Where the hell is a janitor when you need one, damn it?"
"No, we're just kidding. There's no movie. But you know,"
Pretty Boy says, putting his arm around my shoulder, his fingers coiling around a strand of my hair, his mouth close to my ear.
"If you let me fuck you, I'll be real gentle. I promise."
And then they crack up. All I can hear is Kaylin's voice in my head. "They'll just chew you up and spit you out. Girls like me. Girls like me," he said. And then Pretty Boy licks his lips like he might just devour me. Why am I not screaming? Why am I not screaming, running, fighting for my life? They wouldn't do anything. Not in school. Not in a public place. There could be people around. Not any that I can see or hear, but there has to be someone somewhere, right? Right? My heart is about to explode, about to implode. I feel that bullet buried deep, dig in, piercing through some fresh, warm meat inside of me. How could this possibly be happening? "Stop, okay? Don't touch me!" I finally shout, trying to pry his fingers out of my hair. My voice echoes through the hall, mingling with the sound of their laughter.
"Don't touch me,"
Pretty Boy mimics.
That's not what you said to Josh.
I break into a jog, but only make a few strides before he's caught up with me again. Get away from me! I finally yell.
Or what? You'll get your big bad brother to come and beat me up, too?
Pretty Boy says.
I don't think so.
He grabs my backpack and it stops me dead in my tracks.
Dude, come on.
Jock Guy subtly reprimands. All the feeling just drains out of my body, like slowly being novocained from head to toe, so much that I feel like I'm about to pass out. He spins me around, holding onto my arm so tightly, pulling me in so close I'm afraid he might kiss me. I try to break out of his clutch, but I can't move an inch.
Relax. She loves it,
he tells him.
Don't you? Come on, bro,
he calls out, stepping closer.
We gotta go, come on. Let's get out of here, all right?
Pretty Boy's evil grin fades and he allows some distance, and then hesitantly, he finally lets go. I stumble away from him, backing myself right up against the lockers, and I see something like remorse flicker in his eye. Like a neurological twitch. I guess even a psychotic asshole can see I'm terrified.
Come on, McSlutty.
He claps me on the shoulder.
We're just fucking with you,
he says casually, glancing over at Jock Guy.
Yeah, just fucking around,
Jock Guy echoes, reassuring Pretty Boy or himself maybe, but not me.
Take a joke,
Pretty Boy adds, instantly resuming his phony bravado, running a hand through his perfect hair. Leave me alone, I try to say as firmly as possible, despite the fact that I'm shaking uncontrollably and my voice is scarcely above a whisper.
You can't have your brother fight all your battles for you,
Jock Guy says, smiling as he hitches my chin up with his knuckle. I want to spit in his face. They shuffle down the hall, snickering and high-fiving their job well done. I practically run all the way home. I slip on the ice at least a dozen times because I'm not being careful at all. My brain is like scrambled eggs. Josh wouldn't have told them to do that. I know he wouldn't have. Kalen was still home on vacation from school, and I was going to get answers out of him if I had to hold a knife to his throat. He obviously did something to make things worse. I throw the front door open and he flinches, slouched on the couch, watching some ridiculous reality TV show.
What the hell, Edie?
He whines. What did you do? I demand, rushing toward him, not bothering to take my boots off, dragging dirty, wet slush in on the carpet.
Edie, take your fucking shoes off. You're ruining the rug.
What did you do? I repeat, snatching the remote out of his hand. I almost throw it right at his face, but I stop myself at the last second and throw it on the floor instead. It cracks open and the batteries go flying out in opposite directions. He's on his feet, just needing to show me how much bigger and stronger he is than me, as if I could ever forget, as if the entire world wasn't organized just to make sure I never forget, even for a second, that any boy, anywhere, even my brother, could take me.
What the hell is with you?
He finally shouts, looking down at me. What did you do? I say, losing my voice to the tears.
What are you talking about?
You don't even know what you did. You made everything worse. I told you to stay out of it, and now everything's worse. Do you even realize what you've done? Do you even care? God, I hate you! The tears stream down my face, my words fading to nothing as my voice strains to make him comprehend how much he's hurt me. I hate you. I hate you. Hate you so much. I hate you. Hate you. I fucking hate you. Hate you. Hate. I hate. I see his mouth moving, but I can barely hear the words he's screaming back at me. I want to fight now. It's deafening, blinding. I want to fight so hard, to the death.
Edie, stop it. Stop,
he keeps saying over and over. I realize that his hands are now around my wrists, and it's because I had been pounding my fists against his chest.
Would you just calm the fuck down? Sit and tell me what the hell happened.
He pulls me down onto the couch but doesn't let go of my arms. I look at his hands gripping onto me, his knuckles all red and swollen, the skin broken and raw. So he got in a fight with him, with Josh. That's what they meant. So what? You beat him up?
Edie, you don't understand what happened. No, you don't understand. You don't understand what happened, I sob.
Edie, I had to,
he continues, ignoring every word out of my mouth as usual.
No, you didn't. Why couldn't you let me deal with it? It was over. Everything was fine, and now...
But how could I admit what had just happened? Because if they had wanted to, they could have done anything. And I was not tough. I was weak. So fucking weak, like I always knew I was. Like everyone always knew I was. It's too humiliating. When did you even see him? I ask instead.
New Year's Eve. We were at this party, drinking, whatever, and then a bunch of the guys start talking shit. Things that he told them, Eden. Things I never wanted to hear about my little sister, by the way. And so then he shows up later, and he's drinking and saying all this stupid fucked up shit. We got into it, okay?
Got into it? Let go of me. What is that supposed to mean? Let go of me!
No, I'm scared.
He roars back.
I'm scared of you. You're out of your mind. I'm not letting go.
Let. Me. Go.
I jerk my arms with each word.
Don't. Don't. Hit me. Again. I'm so fucking serious, Edie.
He says, his voice low as he tightens his grip. We stare each other down, brimming with some kind of deep-seated rivalry that's about to drown us both. Then he finally releases my wrists. What did they say he said, Kaylin? I take my coat off, wipe my eyes on the sleeve of my shirt. He leans back, crossing his arms, sulking like a child.
I can't even repeat it.
If it's that bad, then it didn't come from him. He's not like that. You know him. He doesn't even drink. He doesn't like being around drunk people. Was he even really there, or did you have to go find him?
Edie.
He looks up at me and grins.
Come on, all he had to do was say one thing to these assholes. It came from him, no matter what he said to start it. And he was there. And completely fucking trashed, okay?
God, you're so naive, he says with a laugh. You're the one who's naive. Did you actually think they would just let something like this go?
That piques his attention. The sudden realization that he's not all-powerful, that he's not in control of everything anymore.
Did somebody say something? Did he actually have the balls to talk to you again?
No, not him. I didn't even see him at school today.
Who, then?
He demands.
Who?
Why? Do you want to make it 10 million times worse? Maybe get me killed or something? You'd like that, wouldn't you? Then you wouldn't have to be so embarrassed of me.
Edie, come on, don't say that.
He tries to reach for me.
You know that's not... Edie...
He calls, but I'm already gone. I slam my bedroom door as hard as I can. I turn the lock 90 degrees and slink down to the floor. And suddenly, everything in my body goes quiet. Everything in my mind, quiet. Like I've exhausted every emotion, every reaction, every thought, and I have nothing left to offer, not to Kaylin, not even to myself. I hear him shouting on the other side of my door, pounding.
Edie. Edie? Eden.
Pounding, pounding, pounding.
Open this fucking door.
He rattles the doorknob, trying to get in.
Edie, are you okay? Edie, damn it.
I say nothing. I do nothing. I feel nothing.
Edie, please.
He says quietly. Almost sadly.
Please, Edie.
I can hear him breathing on the other side of the door, breathing oddly, like unevenly. But no, it's not just him breathing, I realize slowly. He's crying. And I kneel there on the other side of the door that might as well be the other side of the galaxy, feeling so empty, so dead inside. He tries the knob one more time, and then I hear nothing. Until the front door closes, then the rumble of his car starts in the driveway. Later, after I am a no-show at Family Dinner Theater, where we play the parts of a loving, functional family, Sam's little sister, no understudy, after Mom and Dad, reading for the roles of doting mother and father, go to bed, Kaylin, wholesome, caring big brother, lures me out of my room with my favorite food in the entire world. Kaylin McCrory's famous pizza sandwich, which is exactly what it sounds like. A sandwich filled with pizza toppings, sauce, tons of cheese, pepperoni and mushrooms, and black and green olives, grilled in the sandwich maker to buttery, golden perfection. Sinfully delicious and a time-tested, never-failed peace offering. I can't resist. We stay up late like we did when we were kids, with the TV on low, mocking infomercials and horrible 90s music videos, genuinely entertained by ridiculously corny children's cartoons. And when I fall asleep on the couch, he covers me with the old, scratchy, dusty-smelling but incredibly warm blanket from the hall closet. It is a temporary truce, anyway. I finally see Josh at school the next day. He looks pretty roughed up. Purplish green under his right eye, left cheekbone scraped, a yellowish bruise fading from his jaw. He watches me intently as I walk toward him, like I'm speaking and he's trying really hard to listen to what I'm saying. I'm going to tell him that I didn't have anything to do with what my brother did to him. I want him to tell me he had nothing to do with what his friends did to me. I want to say sorry. I want to make up. I want, even, to tell him how much I've missed him, and how much I want to be with him again, but really with him this time. I'm going to tell him all these things. I am. But suddenly Jock Guy appears next to him, sneering at me. He cups his hand over his mouth and coughs, "Slut," nudging Josh in the ribs with his elbow. Grinning wide, he looks to Josh, then to me, then back to Josh. I stop walking. I wait for his reaction, like Jock Guy waits for it. "Please don't laugh. Please don't laugh," I silently beg. I barely hear his voice carry through the jungle of noise, but I see him glaring at Jock Guy, see his mouth taking the shape of the words, "Don't fucking do that, man. That's so stupid." Jock Guy looks embarrassed, mad, mad at me, mad as hell at me. He exits stage left, a rabid dog with its tail between its legs. Enter stage right. Beautiful brunette in a miniskirt and tight sweater, inexplicably tan for the dead of winter, interlacing her French-tipped fingers with Josh's, standing on her tiptoes to kiss his cheek, her smile dripping with honey. I guess she's my replacement. An upgrade, clearly. She nuzzles her face into his arm like some kind of adoring pedigree kitten, but when her eyes meet mine, that sweet smile is all feral and fanged. It scares me more than slut coughs, almost as much as secret after-school ambushes. Obviously, I have stumbled onto the wrong side of the invisible but ever-present velvet rope. Even Josh isn't immune to these cruel taxonomies. He opens his mouth like he's going to say something, call out to me, like he's been waiting to say something just as I have. But then, remembering the order of things, he stops himself, looks down at the girl latched to his side. Things would have to stay unsaid. And so I put on my game face, my new face, my tough face, and just walk away. Part 3. Junior Year. "You remember the plan, right?" Mara asks me as we pull into the gas station in her brand new old car. Her dad gave her his beat-up brown Buick for her 16th birthday. It was the one he'd had since we were kids. But basically, it was a guilt gift for being such a crappy father, for having a girlfriend, for canceling his weekends with Mara all the time. "You really think this will work?" I check my lipstick in the rearview mirror just once more. "I think so. I mean, if that sophomore can pull it off, we sure as hell can," she reminds me. We'd overheard this girl bragging on the first day of school about how she'd been scoring beer from some guy who works weeknights at this particular gas station. "All you have to do is flirt a little," she'd said. "Just act natural," Mara whispers as we push through the door. A bell dings over our heads. The air conditioning blasts down on us and the fluorescent lights blare overhead. I meet eyes with the guy behind the counter. He grins, looking us both up and down simultaneously, then down and up, from our heels, up our legs, still tan from our summer spent in Mara's pool, to our skirts, to our too-tight shirts. "Hey," Mara says in his direction, a little too casually. Just a minute, she says to me. I have to grab a couple of things. She walks toward the back of the store to the freezer section and casts a look at me over her shoulder. I walk up to the counter as planned. Can I get 20 on pump 4? I ask him, sliding the bill across the counter. Mara said we need to make sure he knows we're driving. That way we'll seem older. Can I also have a pack of menthol lights in the box, please? I add, remembering to smile. He looks at me closely, a knowing smirk, but reaches up over his head and pulls out a pack of cigarettes from a shelf I can't see.
Anything else?
He asks, tossing the box onto the counter in the space between us. I look behind me as Mara makes her way up the aisle with a six-pack in each hand. It's all together, Mara tells him as she sets the beer on the counter. Oh, and these too, she adds, picking up a packet of little foam tree air fresheners from the impulse buy row of random merchandise littering the counter. She is still thinking the car is the key to all of this, and not our breasts and lips and bare legs. Still, he doesn't ask any questions. He just reserves the right to gawk at us without needing to hide it. I can feel Mara holding her breath as we pay. I can feel her holding her breath as she slips the trees and the pack of cigarettes into her purse. Holding her breath as she hurriedly ushers us out of the store. We don't dare speak or even look at each other until we're back inside the car. Oh, my God, Edie, Mara says to me, barely moving her lips as she drives past the storefront windows and waves to the guy behind the counter, still watching us. Holy shit, I cannot believe we just pulled that off, she says with a laugh as soon as she pulls out onto the road. You were amazing, she yells, wide-eyed. So are you. I was good, wasn't I? Lavishly, she stretches her arm out the window. This is going to be the best year, Edie, she shouts, looking over at me with an enormous smile. She turns the radio up so loud I can't even hear myself laughing. So where are we going again? I yell. What? She yells back. Where are we going? I repeat, my voice straining. A surprise! And then she turns down all the familiar roads we've been turning down our entire lives, past the churches and the fast food chains and the car wash, and at the town limit sign, just when I expect her to turn left, she keeps going straight. Every time we meet an intersection, I expect her to make a U-turn and go back, but she doesn't. I lower the volume on the radio. Okay, really, where are we going? I ask her again. It's a surprise, she sings. I'm positive there is nothing in this town that will be a surprise. It's literally a copy of ours, except it takes about 11 minutes to drive from one end to the other instead of 10. I laugh. It's just as dull and boring as... Not so fast, my little cynic, Mara interrupts, shaking her finger at me with a grin as she turns the wheel again and again, steering us down short, dark streets. Okay. She finally turns the radio off. Look familiar? She asks as she slows the car over the gravel parking lot. I can't believe it. I completely forgot about this place, Mara, I tell her, opening my car door before she's even come to a complete stop. I once believed this was the most magical place on the planet. I walk closer. It's smaller now, it seems, than it was when we were kids, but still wonderful. The giant wooden playground is what we always called it, but it's so much more than that. It's a wooden castle the size of a Hollywood mansion, with towers and bridges and turrets and secret passageways, elaborate swings in the shape of life-size horses with black rubber saddles. I knew you would love this. Mara trudges up behind me with the beer. Okay, how many rules are we breaking right now? She asks as we approach the park rule sign. It's past dusk, so the park is officially closed, number one. No smoking, number two. We're bringing in alcohol, number five, while simultaneously breaking rule number seven, no glass containers. That's not too bad, actually, Mara laughs. We take the wooden drawbridge across the sand moat, climbing to the upper level. We sit down on one of the bridges that connect the two highest towers of the castle. We rest our backs against the wooden slats that form the sides of the bridge, and I look up as our eyes adjust to the star-filled sky. Remember how we would beg our parents to bring us here when we were little? Mara asks, opening a beer for each of us. Yeah, and they would always, always say it was too far away. I had no idea how close this place was. It took, what, like 15 minutes to get here? I always imagined it was hours and hours away. Another lie, Mara snorts, taking a swig of beer. Just like Santa, the Tooth Fairy, swig, marriage, she adds, staring into space. Anyway, she segues. Yeah, I had no clue this place still existed. My dad brought me here to practice driving in the parking lot. My parents still won't even talk about letting me get my learner's permit. So at least you have your license and a car. They get points for that, right? I try. Whatever. She shrugs, lighting a cigarette. I want to remind her of the fact that her parents were never happy, that they made each other miserable, and her too, that it's been more than 3 years, and she needs to accept it. But I know these things are off limits, so I light a cigarette too and look out over our little kingdom. You know, when we were kids, I would climb up there. I point with my bottle, to the highest tower. Pretend I was some kind of princess, trapped. Waiting, I tell her, exhaling a cloud of smoke. She turns and smiles. Waiting for what? I don't know. Life to begin? For something to happen, I shout, hearing my voice echo. What are you talking about? We're still waiting for that, she shouts back into the night sky. Okay, well, maybe we're still waiting, but now we're doing it with a car. I laugh, raising my beer in the air. And alcohol, Mara shouts as we clink our bottles together. She falls forward with laughter, her beer sloshing out everywhere, and I laugh along with her for no reason, louder than I think I've ever laughed in my life, until it feels like my lungs might burst, until it feels like freedom.
Hey, who's up there?
Someone yells from down below. Footsteps crunch through the cedar chips that line the ground, getting closer.
Shh, shh, shh,
Mara whispers with her finger across her lips.
Cops,
she asks, turning toward me, her eyes wide with fear. I press my face against the wooden slats and look down at two shadowy figures, one using his phone as a flashlight. Cops wouldn't do that.
Not cops. Two guys,
I whisper to Mara. Mara slides up next to me and looks down at them.
Watch,
she whispers. She places two fingertips in the corners of her mouth and lets out the loudest, most eardrum-piercing whistle. I remember the summer when her dad first taught her how to do that. She couldn't stop, for months. It was her response to any and every situation. Though I'm sure her dad didn't intend for her to get drunk and trespass and whistle like that at strange guys. The one with the phone aims the light in our direction.
Who is that?
He shouts. Mara stands up and leans over the railing, waving her beer in the air.
Up here,
she calls.
Mara,
I shout, trying to pull her back down. She grabs my arm instead and pulls me up to my feet.
Hey, ladies,
the other one yells.
Want some company?
Come on up,
Mara yells back.
What are you doing?
I laugh.
Something is finally happening,
she says under her breath.
Let's just have fun, okay?
I bring the bottle to my mouth and finish off half the beer in one gulp. Okay, I answer, wiping my mouth with the back of my hand. We watch as they climb up the tower to meet us, whispering and laughing just like we are. Something switches inside of me, in my head and my heart and my stomach. A lightness, a weightlessness takes over me, and I feel the corners of my mouth turn up. Okay, I repeat. Mara repositions her hand on her hip and adjusts her stance a few times, brushing her hair back with the other. As they approach, I get a better look. They appear to be our age. Their faces seem soft, unthreatening.
Hey,
the first one says, pushing his two long hair behind his ears.
I'm Alex. This is Troy,
he tells us, pointing to the other. Troy raises his hand and says,
Hi.
I'm Mara, and this is Eden. I interrupt. No Edie with these guys.
Awesome,
Troy says, nodding his head with a ridiculous smile. They're both dressed like they just don't care, a sort of disheveled grunge look. I kind of like it. It takes the pressure off somehow. Alex looks at us closely and asks,
You two don't go to Central, do you?
No, Mara offers. How could you tell?
Because Central is full of total douchebags.
The other guy, Troy, answers.
Except for us, of course,
Alex adds. So what are you guys doing here? I ask them, which happens to be the best conversation I'm capable of making.
This is our spot,
Troy answers.
What are you doing here?
Celebrating, Mara says. My birthday.
All right. Well, happy birthday,
Alex offers.
It just so happens we have the perfect birthday present.
He nudges Troy, who reaches into his back pocket and pulls out a small, flat, rectangular silver box. Mara raises her eyebrows at me. We lean in as he opens it, revealing a neat row of tightly rolled joints.
So can we, join in the party?
He laughs, gesturing to our stash of beer. Mara smiles and sits down. Alex sits next to her. Then Troy and I sit opposite them. He smiles at me in this peaceful, silly way, and I think he must already be a little stoned. Mara passes around bottles for each of us, and Troy lights up. This sweet, pungent smoke spreads over me like a wave. He exhales and passes it to me. I hold it between my fingers for a moment, considering it.
What? You don't smoke?
Troy asks, as if that would be the most absurd thing in the history of the world. Alex sets his phone in the middle of our circle and starts some music. I don't know, I mumble with a shrug. I look at Mara. Are we really doing this? I try to ask her without words. What she means is, birthday girl goes first, right? She says as she takes the joint from me. I don't care if I'm not being cool. I don't want her to do it. Mara, I start, but I'm too late. She closes her eyes as she inhales, then exhales a stream of smoke. She opens her eyes and looks at me with a smile and a nod. She passes it to Alex, who's staring at me. He watches me as he inhales and then passes it to Troy.
She's scared,
Alex says, still holding onto the smoke in his lungs, grinning. They all turn their heads toward me. I am not scared, I lie. I feel fine, Mara tells me. Then she turns to Alex. I feel really, really fine. And they start laughing hysterically.
It'll help you relax, that's all,
Troy says softly, passing it over to me again.
Try it. Just go slow.
I place the paper between my lips and inhale.
Okay,
Troy instructs me.
Now hold it. Just a second. Okay, let go.
And I exhale. I pass it to Mara, who's still laughing. It goes around the circle from one person to the next in slow motion.
How do you feel?
Troy asks. I don't know, I say, my words jumbled up together. Even I can hear the panic in my voice. Dizzy? Lightheaded?
Please don't freak out,
Alex says like he's annoyed.
You're not freaking out,
Troy assures me.
Here, try again.
I have no idea why I do, but I do. Then Mara takes it from me. My heart is racing, I tell Troy, holding my hand over my chest.
That's normal,
he tells me, and he takes my hand and puts it over his heart instead.
See?
But your heart's not racing, I tell him.
Neither is yours,
he says, giggling. What? I ask. That doesn't even make sense, I tell him, feeling my mouth spread out into a smile.
It doesn't?
He laughs.
I thought it did.
Suddenly, this all feels like the funniest thing that's ever happened, so I start laughing too until I can barely breathe. I feel like one second I look and see Mara and Alex laughing, and the next I look and they're not there anymore. Where did they go? I ask Troy.
Over there,
he says slowly, pointing down. He's pushing her on the giant horse swing. They're laughing slowly. Mara? I yell. Hi! She yells back, waving her arm over her head. This is so weird, I whisper.
Yeah,
he agrees with a smile, and he lies down, stretching out the length of the bridge. The next thing I know, I'm opening my eyes. Mara's shaking my shoulder. Alex standing behind her, their voices blending together, saying, Wake up! Get up! Get up!
Dude, get up! Troy!
He shouts. Edie, it's 3 a.m. We need to get out of here.
Oh, man.
Troy mumbles, moving his arm from behind my neck. I sit up slowly from this total stranger's arms. What happened? We all fell asleep, Mara answers. Now we have to hurry the hell up and get home before we're on house arrest until we're 21, Mara shouts, pulling on my arm.